Well, the physics room, it's an art space on the corner of Chewham and High Street up above Alice in Videoland. And another exhibition opens up today. It's called Supernatural. It's curated by Emily Cormack. And she joins me in the studio along with Regan Gentry, who is one of the artists who is there for Supernatural. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good to have you in. Now, the Supernatural is the exhibition that's on. What can you tell me about Supernatural? I've just put on some what I think is kind of supernatural sort of music behind. Yeah. Supernatural. Why Supernatural?
Well, the first thing is that I just want to make it clear that it's nothing to do with ghosts in this show. It's nothing to do with ghouls or...
Nothing to do with aliens?
No.
Abductions? Nothing?
No aliens, no abductions, none of that stuff. Well, nothing that literal anyway. I've been thinking about the idea of the supernatural for a couple of years now. And I just started discovering a whole lot of work which was sort of talking about taking an idea or an object and extending it right to the outermost limits of its potentiality. So it's sort of having an idea and extending it right out so that it's almost absurd but not quite.
Right.
Yeah, and also if you actually combine the words super and natural, they're a paradox, you know, because then the natural is something which is always around, something that's just sort of imminent in existence. And then when you extend that with the word super, which means beyond and extending, you get quite an interesting sort of idea.
So when you're thinking about this, Emily, when you're thinking about, okay, what you want to do, so you think of the idea and then you go and find the artists?
No. I work quite a different way to a lot of curators in that all of my ideas stem from seeing works.
Right.
So I'll see a lot of works and then, you know, I'll say, oh, that reminds me of that, that reminds me of that, and then start drawing those connections based on the actual work that I'm seeing, and from that the idea comes up. But all of the shows I only ever do are things that I'm particularly interested in. So.
Now, Regan, your work is being exhibited. Are you ever surprised when someone like Emily comes up to you and said, oh, look, I can see, you know, that your work there relates to this other person's work over here, and so I'm drawing lines between the two?
A lot of the ideas come from, like, looking at other people's work and going, like, oh, well, yeah, I reckon that would probably be quite good if you did that and did this and did that. So, you know, I mean, that other person's work might be a fantastic work, but it would be another good work if you did this other version of it.
You know? Or are you too afraid to turn around to Emily and say, look, I've got no idea what you're talking about. Look, I'm doing my stuff here.
I probably did say that initially, but then she gave me the blurb of, like, what the show was going to be about, and, like, she'd actually sort of nailed one of the works that I'd done in the past and sort of said, well, this is kind of... what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, this is the toilet paper video.
Right.
And it's, like, you know, you imagine toilet paper being a really weak, flimsy sort of structure.
Rather useful, though.
But very useful. Where would we be without it?
Do you want to just explain the word?
Yeah, that one's like, I got one of those really big rolls, the ones you find, like, in a lot of the institutional areas, the, you know, big foot-round kind of rolls.
Oh, yeah, and it's kind of a scratchy sort of toilet paper.
Industrial
grade, yeah.
Yeah, the good thing about that toilet paper is that it doesn't have any perforations. You know, so it put that guy who had that job of perforating toilet paper out of a job, but, you know, never mind.
Yeah.
So it's got basically, like, there's 650 metres on that roll, and so I did a video where I went to a part of Wellington where... it's incredibly windy up past the windmill, obviously, and held the toilet roll above my head and held the sort of camera in the other hand and let the wind do its thing, and it just sort of unreeled the whole roll out in front of the video, and it sort of wiggles around in relation to what the wind's doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your general assumptions, like, with toilet paper is that it's a short kind of thing because, you know, your immediate associations with it are, like, these little bits. And so to see it in, like, this really... you know, like 400 metres of toilet paper just wiggling around in the sky. It looks quite unusual.
So you obviously chose the right day, you know, with the with the wind in the right direction. Because I think I'm looking now at a photo from the video. I actually thought that was some kind of, some kind of contrail from an aeroplane, but now you're telling me that's toilet paper in the sky. That's amazing.
So that was kind of like what Emily was saying, how you get something, you know, really normal and just push it to a limit that you wouldn't expect it to be able to go.
And it's sort of bringing out the kind of innate qualities of an object, which are never really allowed to come out.
Mm. Well, I mean, normally it's just something that's a little bit dirty, just sits next to the toilet.
Yeah.
Mm. It's got, so it's got, sort of, got a disgusting little purpose in life.
Yeah, sort of overlooked and overset as well. Yeah. So
there's a lot of work in the show where the artists have sort of done really close listening to the object or looking at it really closely and then have kind of revealed an aspect of the object that perhaps it would reveal if it could.
Yeah. Are they, Emily, are they a motley crew of artists? Was it difficult to bring these people together?
No, it's not difficult. A lot of them were quite surprised to be putting a show together. But I think that they've basically seen how it's come together and have worked out the connections between their work, which they would never normally have made themselves. But, you know, it's come together really beautifully in the space, the works of sort of conversing with each other.
Because, of course, you originally see these works, in different spaces around the country, and they're maybe in quite different contexts, but then to actually put them all in one space, was that a trial for you?
Well, no, I'd kind of worked it out conceptually, so that there's three rooms at the physics room, and they were each sort of addressing three different perspectives of the idea. So, you know, it's quite they're quite cohesive conceptually, and then it just has worked out really beautifully aesthetically as well. Mm. Regan's done this.
I'll just add to that. I'd find it really scary as a curator because you have to trust the artist so much that all we give them often in the beginning is like a piece of paper or, you know, we met for a beer and I said like, oh, I want to do this thing with umbrellas and toilet paper as well. She's just probably like going, oh, yeah, righto, what, you know? And, you know, so she's got to try and imagine what I'm imagining and so you've got a couple of, you know, vague ideas, but... So, you know, she has to know kind of our general practice as well and, like, what we're going to pull out the bag because often, you know...
I generally only ever get artists that I really trust.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you often know them beforehand?
Personally, but you might know their practice.
Okay.
You
know. Yeah.
Especially if you're getting them to make new work, you know, you really have to trust them.
Are the artists involved in this particular exhibition? Are they experienced? Would you consider them experienced?
We're all very professional. Yeah. Not that we're full time ever, because it's hard to.
Regan, what's your day job?
I'm a technician at the art school actually in Wellington.
Okay.
So you know, it's kind of I work a lot with material, so I sort of like study the qualities of different things and seeing how far you can push stuff and.
What, like pressure testing and tension and...
I had a work a while ago that was in a show that Emily was actually as an artist in, we loaded up ironing boards with as much rubble as we possibly could to see what would happen. And we got 3 tons of rubble onto 23 ironing boards. That was 140 kgs per ironing board, so that was two sort of strapping lads standing on an ironing board. Sort of. And that... worked, so you could probably, you know, essentially
something to try at home.
Almost three people standing on an ironing board. Yeah, don't try that at home. Or don't stand underneath that and try and photograph it, at least if you're going to. So,
it's fascinating. So taking a normal household item and just putting it in a completely different
turn it upside down and wiggle around a bit and see what else it can do. Like, you know, I mean, its function is sort of specific, but kind of there are other things you can do with it. You know, we're New Zealanders, so we all...
Are you referring to that number 8 wire sort of mentality?
That mentality, that's sort of, you know, implicated in a lot of my works, I suppose.
Emily, you were also recently a venue attendant at the New Zealand Pavilion at the 51st Venice Biennale.
Yep.
Was that a great experience?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Entirely satisfying experience, really.
So what did you have to do? Was it showing people around or just standing at the door?
It was it basically involved talking to about 250 people every day about New Zealand culture. So
what do people want to know about New Zealand?
Most people sort of, they'd come in and they'd see the Et Al project and some people would sort of react quite surprised that this sort of work or this aesthetic could come out of New Zealand. They'd say, wow, this is German work, you know.
I think most New Zealanders were surprised as well.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'd say, well, actually New Zealand's got a really energised contemporary art scene and we've got all sorts of stuff going on that's talking in global discourses.
Yeah.
And they were very surprised. But because there were elements in Et Al's work which are talking about New Zealand culture, you know, quite obliquely but also quite specifically, so once you revealed those to them, then they would go, oh, and they'd see that we were engaging with this global discourse but from a very local perspective. And people would generally... I mean, I didn't have a single person who didn't like the work.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't in our mandate to explain the work because that's not something... But you'd guide them. You just guide them.
Because the feedback kind of afterwards seemed rather mixed, really, from the Biennale about Et Al's work.
I haven't actually read any negative press.
Really?
No. Okay. And I didn't meet a single person in the 250 people I spoke to every day for 6 weeks.
Was the flack that et al. Was getting, was that frustrating for you, for someone who was closer to the work?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the thing was that it was just a media construction.
It ended up being very political as well.
Yeah. But you know, all of that stuff, that was just completely inflated by the media and a complete construction, really. There was no foundation to any of it. And, you know, if anyone wanted to read an interview with the artist, there was one on the Creative New Zealand website. If anyone wanted to talk to the curator was always on call. It was like the curator was answering all the questions that the media were saying she wasn't. And it was just someone trying to, you know, promote their reporting career.
Yeah, right. someone trying to find a controversy.
Yeah, you know, and...
But and hasn't it put et al. Out there in front of mainstream New Zealand?
That's right. I just, you know, the only thing I can really hope is that it hasn't had a detrimental effect on the fact that we might, you know, on the possibility of us showing at Venice again. Because I think, you know, as a way of exposing the world to New Zealand culture, I mean, there's not really any other mediums or forums that are that effective.
What you needed was maybe a toilet paper to get caught in a Boeing engine or something like that.
That would have put you up on
the stage. You've got a whole bunch of other talented artists down there as well. Of course, Nick Mangan, Tao Wells, Julian Summich as well, Dan Upps.
Yep.
And it all kicks off with an opening today at 5:30 p.m.
5:30, come along, there'll be some wine.
It's the Physics Room, which is just above Alice and Videoland on the corner of High and Chewham Streets. It's a pleasure having you, Emily, in.
Thanks, Wemo.
And Regan as well.
Thank you.
And we'll see you down there.